This is Rick Malone for the San Francisco Symphony. Johannes Brahms was not a particularly religious man, at least not in the strict sense. He had been raised Lutheran in the Protestant tradition of northern Germany and knew his Bible very well. But somewhere in his life, he grew away from the church and came to consider himself an agnostic, or what might today be termed a secular humanist. His good friend Antonin Dvorak, who was very religious, once said of him, "Such a fine man, such a fine soul, and he believes in nothing." But, as the author Walter Niemann wrote, the fact that Brahms began his creative activity with the German folk song and closed with the Bible reveals the true religious creed of this great man of the people. End quote. Brahms may, on the surface, have been an unusual choice to write a requiem, but it is also a most unusual requiem. Brahms' impulse to write some kind of musical memorial was spurred by two emotionally cataclysmic events: the deaths of his mentor, Robert Schumann, in 1856, and of his mother 9 years later. Brahms often deflected questions about such personal matters, but he admitted in a letter to Clara Schumann that his mother's death had given him the impulse to pull together ideas that had begun germinating after Robert's death. At that time, Brahms had started a sonata for two pianos that was beginning to turn into a symphony. He eventually scrapped the project, though not before turning parts of the first movement into what became the opening of his first piano concerto. One of the other movements of the abandoned symphony was to have been a funeral march for Robert Schumann. After his mother died, Brahms took that idea and used it as the compositional starting point for what he called a German requiem, primarily because the text was to be German rather than the traditional Latin. But several other factors were at work. One was the growing concept of a German nation, which would unite the Protestant North with the Catholic South, with all power vested in the state rather than in the former seat of the old Holy Roman Empire. The other was Brahms' own dissatisfaction with the dogma of both the Catholic and Lutheran churches. He ended up using almost none of the text of the traditional Requiem Mass. Instead, he chose his own passages from the Old and New Testaments, as well as from the Apocrypha. The verses he chose convey a more humanist message. No mention of Jesus Christ or salvation, no descriptions of the horrors of the Last Judgment. Brahms' Requiem was not meant to be a Mass for the dead, but a comfort for the living. In the opening of the Requiem, Brahms uses a trick of orchestration that he had used to great effect in his second serenade 7 years earlier, darkening the coloration by omitting the violins, as well as almost all the other bright, high-pitched instruments. The opening phrase in the cellos quotes a 17th century Lutheran hymn, "They who leave all to God." When Brahms was asked about this detail, he said, typically, "Oh well, if nobody notices, I suppose that's all right too." The first choral entry, Selig Sind, or Blessed Are, spells out the melodic cell that recurs throughout the work, a major third followed by a half step in the same direction. The poignant phrase, mit Tränen, in tears, uses the same pattern but in reverse order. The harp enters gently as the choir sings "They That Sow in Tears." Then underscores the gentle lift to the verse about the promise of reaping joy, and finally accentuates the glorious upsurge as the sopranos reach their high A just before the end. In the second movement, Brahms finally introduces the violins with the funeral march that survived from that early attempt at a symphony. The drums enter for the first time as they beat ominous triplets across that strange blend of death march and dance. The music reaches a climax as the choir sings "All Flesh is Grass." The accompaniment to the passage about the early and the latter rain is so pictorial it might be by Bach. And in fact, many of the early commentators and critics compared this work to Bach's great choral pieces. Twice the death march rises to a great climax and finally opens out into the magnificent chorus about the joy of those ransomed in the Lord. The movement ends quietly with throbbing drums and garlands of scales. In much the same way that Beethoven had ended the Adagio of the Ninth Symphony and the Credo of his Missa Solemnis. Now the baritone soloist begins a somber recitative in dialogue with the chorus, reflecting on the insignificance of mankind. Agitation grows over the question, "And now, Lord, what is my hope?" The answer, "My hope is in thee," rises from the depths. This is the turning point, as the chorus tells us that the souls of the righteous are in the hands of God. Brahms gives us another tribute to Bach, a double fugue over a sustained pedal point on D. The faith that there shall no torment touch them is sustained without a break through 36 spacious measures. At the first performance, the entire work almost fell apart right here when the timpanist misunderstood the directions in the score and began pounding away, drowning out the rest of the orchestra and chorus. The fourth movement is the centerpiece of the Requiem, and probably the best-known portion of the entire work, "How Lovely is Thy Dwelling Place." The eternal praise of God becomes another occasion for Brahms to channel Bach. The fifth movement was the last part of the Requiem Brahms wrote, adding it after the first performances. The verses from St. John, Isaiah, and Ecclesiastes are delicately scored, quiet, and intimate. And both soloist and choir fade into the distance as they repeat the word, Wiedersehen, farewell. The baritone returns as a guide to the Last Judgment, but here there are no terrors, only mysteries. It's the movement that most clearly defines the difference between Brahms and his contemporaries. Brahms' Last Trump is just as exciting as Berlioz or Verdi's, but there is not even a trace of theatrical effect here. Brahms does it all on sheer harmonic energy, building to overwhelming proportions in the hugely swinging sequences of Death is swallowed up in victory. O death, where is thy sting? O grave, where is thy victory? But the greatest of the climaxes is yet to come. Brahms reserves that for his triumphant transition to C major for another fugue on Thou Art Worthy, O Lord. That final fugue grew out of the basic three-note motif that began the Requiem, and the same pattern opens the seventh and final movement. And as so often happens in Brahms, the end and the beginning become one. The melody which opened the work with Blessed Are They That Mourn becomes Blessed Are the Dead. The waves of sound that crest and fall through the orchestra give the movement its energy. The great critic Donald Tovey suggested that what Brahms had in mind here was the phrase from Revelation that precedes the one he actually set to music. So the text of this movement really begins, I heard a voice from heaven saying unto me, Write, blessed are the dead which die in the Lord from henceforth. The harmonies in the movement ride those waves far and wide until finally returning home to F major. Once again, the sopranos rise to a high A on the word Lord, and at that moment, the harps, which have not been heard since halfway through the second movement, begin their own climb toward heaven. They enter on their lowest note as the singers touch their highest, and when the harps reach their own summit, the chorus is heard in the depths with distant echoes of the word Blessed. At first, Brahms' Requiem was applauded only in the Protestant parts of Germany. Reaction in Catholic areas ranged from puzzlement to outrage. But critical appreciation and audience applause began to grow until the work was being performed worldwide, cementing Brahms' reputation as one of the greatest of living composers. Schumann had once told Brahms that if he could marshal the forces of chorus and orchestra together, he would raise the mysteries of the spirit world before his audiences. Brahms' German Requiem, which he would have preferred to call a human requiem, not only raises those mysteries, it presents them as a source of consolation, a source of hope. This is Rick Malone for the San Francisco Symphony.